the hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What about when your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Welcome into Attacking Third for a special Wednesday edition with Sandra Herrera. I'm Lisa Carlin. We are here chatting so much about women's football, some news that's happened, and we're going to get into some fun topics. Sandra, good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, Lisa. Buenos dias, everybody joining us in the chat. I'm here. It's like, you know, we're just getting back in the swing of things. We keep doing these, keep meeting up like this in the middle of the week. And you like it. I love it, bud.
Quick little reminder for everyone. Attacking Third is in studio. You can watch us on Golazo Network Monday and Thursday. And then Wednesdays, Sandra and I do a very special episode on YouTube. So you can join us live, youtube.com/attackingthird. And of course, this episode, as all of our episodes, will be out as podcasts. So listen and download, follow, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Today, Sandra, we have some really fun topics that we're getting into. We're talking about some trades and transfers in NWSL history. The best, the most surprising. We're also going to give our Attacking Third Way Too Early awards. It's only after week four in the NWSL season, but we've got some interesting takes. We have a very special interview today. Puerto Rican goalkeeper Sydney Martinez joins us. And then, as always, our In Case You Missed It segment, breaking down everything that may have happened in the last week that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet. But first, we have some breaking news that dropped yesterday in the NWSL. The Portland Thorns are restructuring their coaching staff and moving former head coach Mike Norris to be the technical director. And now Rob Gale is named as the interim head coach. This comes after Portland's historically bad start through 4 weeks of the NWSL season. They're in last place. They've only managed a single point. They haven't won at all. And now with Rob Gale as the interim head coach, Karina LeBlanc, the GM of the Thorns, has stated that they are searching for a full-time replacement as a head coach. However, they've expressed that it is important to get it done correctly, not quickly. So Rob Gale steps into that interim role. He joined the Portland Thorns as an assistant coach before the 2023 season. And before that, he was a youth coach in NYCFC's academy system. He was head coach and GM in the Canadian Premier League and a youth coach in Canada's women's national team program. Sandra, when this news dropped, were you surprised that Portland is making moves 4 weeks into the season?
You know, yes and no. I had mixed surprised reactions. I was surprised that it came in the way of a restructuring, but I'm also surprised because there's still a part of me that's like, this Portland Thorns roster is so talented. Like, I know, surely any minute now they're gonna get it together. So there's like always, there's like something like this happens, there's just like that mix, like I had that kind of mixed reaction to it. But there's also the sports business like part of it where I question a lot, because they refer to this as a soccer operations restructuring, and there was literally 1.5 restructurings. It was moving Mike Norris out and naming an interim. That's not really a mass wave of reorganization for me. That's semi addressing the issue that was in front of him, and the issue that was in front of them was, like what you said, Lisa, it's a historic worst start to the franchise and their regular season. So the fact that they have had no wins in these opening 4 weeks, their lone point really coming by way of the fact that they got so much extra time added onto a game and they were able to keep chugging and chugging along. And again, because they have talented players, big players find big moments. Sam Coffey, equalizer. They were able to just scrape out a point, you know? So I think there was enough in front of them to say as a franchise, something has to happen. And you also have to, you know, we're quoting LeBlanc, their general manager, that means that they have to make hard decisions and she has to make hard decisions. And it doesn't come in the way of a termination. It doesn't come in the way of a firing. It comes in the way of a restructuring. So they feel like he'll be a better fit as technical director. And now they're going to have someone else as interim head coach while they go through a coaching search that doesn't have a timeline on it. So I'm not too sure how many silver linings there are in this opening news.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. There is a lack of silver linings, frankly. Mike Norris was really only in this role for about a year. He took over after Rian Wilkinson retired and stepped away after she won the championship with the Thorns 2 years ago. So 2022, Mike Norris led the team throughout 2023. They were one game away from winning the Shield at the end of it. They had a good season last year. Not a lot of turnover in their roster. Not too much turnover, I should say, in their roster. They are stacked talent-wise. They have a lot of good players. And they're not performing. So the fact that the team is making changes 4 weeks in is great. Right? Like they want to win. They have new ownership in the Bethal family. There's a standard there to uphold at the Portland Thorns, but this just seems like not enough of a change to me, frankly. We'll see. We'll see how Rob Gale does and takes over things with Mike Norris now in the technical director role. That's more of like the technical team side of it. So scouting, development, performance analysis, reviews like that. That will be Mike Norris's new role, but just interesting kind of the rotation of it.
The only other thing that I'll add to is when something like this happens, there's that constant like reaction of like, well, what is going to come next? Like who is going to, you know, be the best fit for the Portland Thorns head coach? So that'll probably be a whole episode for a whole other day. But if you're curious, I threw mine out on .com. So hey, you can go check him out. I've got some folks that I'd maybe like to see, you know, in the mix in terms of this global search that the Thorns are apparently going to go on for the next head coach.
We'll see. Of course, we'll have updates for you right here on Attacking Third. We'll talk about it as well in the studio tomorrow with Jenny Chu, Darian Jenkins, Sandra Herrera, always joining me, Lisa, in the studio for Attacking Third on Thursday. You can watch that on Galazzo Network. We're always talking about it here on YouTube and as a podcast. And read the written word by our very own Sandra Herrera on CBSSports.com for more on that. And we'll keep you updated with the search for a new permanent head coach for the Portland Thorns. There is some other news around the world of women's football. The latest update out of Brazil. Head coach Clayton Lima resigns from top flight Brazilian club Santos following the players' protest. Attacking Third did speak about this on Monday's show. Head coach at Santos, Clayton Lima, he stepped down last year after the club received 19 letters from players accusing him of sexual harassment and abusive behavior. Lima was then rehired at Santos, the club. Last weekend, across the Brazilian league, players from several different teams put their hands over their mouths and over their ears protesting the rehiring of Lima. On Monday, Clayton Lima resigned as the manager. The club said in a statement, quote, to protect his family integrity in Santos FC, Clayton Lima has submitted his resignation, which was accepted by the club. The statement also said that Lima had been, quote, a target of criticism and even death threats since being rehired. So he's now gone. He's away from the club. Is this kind of how you saw it unfolding, Sandra?
Is it like just supremely messed up if I'm like, yes?
Yeah.
Because like, here we are, Lisa, like we're doing this again. It's like, we do a couple of things at Attacking Third. We want to like talk about fun stories. We want to highlight players doing cool things. We do previews, recaps of games, but we also do news. And sometimes the news that we're reacting to is this really terrible, tragic news. And it's not something that's just happened once or twice. It's happened multiple times. We have found ourselves in even in just the short existence of Attacking Third, where we've had to come on here and react to news and headlines like this. So shout out to you guys, you know, on the studio show, really targeting this. Shout out to Duda getting onto the show and talking about this. I thought it was great. If you all haven't checked it out, please check it out. And we've got it on all our channels. So My only reaction is just that. Like when you ask me if I'm surprised at this, I hate that I'm going to sit here and say no. That the way that the things are structured right now, how this is just a constant systemic issue throughout various pockets of global women's soccer is not new. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that this person was allowed to resign, that is what it is. It's not that he resigned and it's not that he stepped down. This person was given the opportunity to resign instead of just believing players to begin with and making sure that you tackle this head on to protect the players, to protect your programs. No, mm-hmm. This person got moved around instead. And now because there has been a very large public reaction to that, this person was given the opportunity to resign.
Exactly. It's more disappointing that the club didn't do anything. Santos didn't do anything. Duda Pavel, who is a Brazilian, she's tapped into the Brazilian top flight women's league. So we had her on the show on Monday. She knows a lot. She's very intelligent. And she kind of broke this down for us, saying that the club didn't do anything. They talked about how they had a really extensive internal investigation. They reached out to former players, current players, to get their information and feedback. And immediately players took to social media saying, I never got reached out to. No one ever talked to me. No one interviewed me for the investigation. So it was deeply unserious, deeply disrespectful. The fact that they rehired him, terrible. And then ultimately, the fact that it is appalling that the club then, after rehiring him and seeing all of this, they didn't fire him, right? Like there's an element of, hey, we messed up. We're going to fire him. We're going to redo an investigation. No, it's Lima who resigned and said, okay, I'm just going to back away with clean hands and kind of shake this off. Absolutely terrible and disturbing to see. We, of course, will keep you updated on anything that comes out of Brazil and the story that continues to develop there. Hopefully a new investigation is started, but we'll keep you updated on that and everything right here on Attacking Third. All right, that was our new segment. We're going to take a quick break, and we're talking some historic trades and transfers in the NWSL when we get back. Don't go anywhere.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's talk some news and transfers and trades and things that have been happening in the NWSL. Shout out to Mark, our producer, for coming up with this segment, because following the news out of the Houston Dash with forward Maria Sanchez, Mexican international, requesting a trade after signing a 4-year contract with the Dash, record-breaking at the time this was signed in December, as a restricted free agent, Sanchez has requested a trade. She wants out of Houston. We did touch on it a little bit on Monday. There are no firm updates as of right now on Maria Sanchez, but as soon as we get that and we have more info, we will fill you in on where she's going and what's happening. But with this, Sandra, and Maria Sanchez making this trade and this announcement, our producer Mark was kind of like, hey, let's talk about some historical and impactful trades that made NWSL history. So I want to know from you, as someone who has been covering this league from many different angles for a long time and helping support it, what are some trades or transfers that stick out to you over the last, I don't know, 11 years or seasons of this league?
Gosh, it's so wild to think about, right? And I think it's wise of us to maybe sort of preface this a little bit as we get into this. We're going to have some fun with it, and we want to, but we definitely want to acknowledge the fact that there's a lot of trades that took place in this league where there wasn't a CBA at one point in time. And so we want to note that how the NWSL used to operate might not have been in the ideal ways for players and their preferences, or even for their, mental health and things like that. So we just definitely want to preface that. We're just going to try to have some fun here. Mm-hmm. And honestly, talk a little bit about it along the way, because maybe there are still some things that need to be improved upon, even when there is a CBA currently in existence for players in the league. So that being said, there's been some wild ones, Lisa. There's been trades that have been pretty just sort of like clear cut, like team, player here. But then there's also trades that have had all of these multiple angles with it, where maybe a third team has to get involved, or maybe even a fourth team has to get involved. But I gotta say, I remember firsthand in 2018, this sort of, at the time, that was viewed as this really kind of massive three-team trade. The NWSL draft was in Philly in 2018, and Houston dash Chicago Red Stars, and at the time, Sky Blue FC were all involved
throwback.
In this kind of blockbuster triangular trade. So Sam Kerr and Nikki Stanton and the number 15 pick from Sky Blue went to Chicago. Kristen Press, the number 7 pick and an international slot, ended up going all the way to, I believe, Houston. And then Sky Blue got Carly Lloyd, Janine Becky, the number 6 pick from the draft, and Jen Hoy, and a number 13 pick. There was multiple players involved, multiple picks, international slots. And this is maybe what I was prefacing in the beginning of this segment, is that what we know now is it highlights certain things where not every player was always in form. There was still that whole player to be named later that came through the draft because they wanted to inform players. So it was funny hearing it kind of announced live in real time, because Jen Hoy wasn't announced in that initial trade, and nor was Nikki Stanton really at that time. So there were players who were going to be notified and then told. So like, there were still things that people were waiting to learn about this trade, even though it happened in the middle of a 2018 draft. And then, of course, we also know that what we know now with Kristen Press did not end up playing for Houston because there was no real dialogue that took place between her and her representation about potentially going to Houston dash side. And we had to see the repercussions and the fallout of that. I mean, that meant that we didn't get to see Kristen Press play in NWSL for, a season. So there were just all of these real kind of like tragic fallouts from a trade like this. And we look at Sam Kerr going to Chicago and winning golden boots and having, playoff appearances. But I think you take a look at a trade like that and see all of those moving pieces, and you can maybe ask some questions of how it played out now, years later.
Yeah, I like that. It's so funny to think back about how all these trades happen and then how ultimately they affect the club, because Sam Kerr going to Chicago, legendary, absolutely legendary. She just continued to break records there time after time. If you're joining us live on YouTube, drop some of your favorite or craziest or trades that you remember in real time being like, what is happening? Where are these people going? I want to shout out one that was in March of 2015.
Ugh, wow, throwback.
Western New York Flash. These teams don't even exist anymore, some of them. They acquire forward Sydney LaRue and defender Amanda Frisbee. While Seattle Reign, they get the rights to forward Abby Wambach, midfielder Amber Brooks, and the Flash's 2016 first-round college pick in the trade. This was a crazy trade at the time, with the players going where they go. But it's even crazier in hindsight, because this was March of the 2015 season. Abby Wambach decided then that she wasn't even going to play in 2015, leading up to the World Cup in 2015. She was going to take the season off to prepare entirely for the World Cup. And then ultimately, Sandra, I know you remember this, after the World Cup, Abby Wambach
retired.
She didn't come back to the league.
Oh, boy.
So clearly, this trade with Seattle and Western New York Flash was, I mean, there's some big names in there, of course, with like Sydney LaRue, Amber Brooks, who's a legend in this league and had played for so long. But like, Abby Wambach is the headliner of this trade. She never even played ultimately, which is, it's funny. It's funny. And now, like, of course, hindsight, knowing that the CBA is now in place to protect players and give them more power and trades and transfers and having the ability to request them or have knowledge before, there's still some things that need to be ironed out and be smoother moving forward. But to me, that one, That one stands out. Besides like draft night trades, because those are crazy. Sandra, you've covered a lot of NWSL drafts. Are there any trades or transfers or moves during the draft that stand out to you?
Well, I think that 2018 one with the three teams that I had mentioned before was probably the biggest one, but maybe not so much, you know, I hate to just sort of like throw back to the one that we just had, but I think that our two most recent drafts that we had are pretty memorable. I think the Lynn Williams trade in last year's draft and then the Ashley Sanchez trade in this draft is pretty memorable. I also like to take a look at like the picks that end up getting swapped in some of these in some of these trades. Like what do those moves end up meaning for a club down the line, because that's another angle of some of these trades. Sometimes when it's player for player, there's also things like the international slot or draft picks that try to sweeten the deal or seal the deal for certain teams. So to know that like part of Portland Thorns and their success has been because they have made some of those moves to stay relevant in the drafts. They have always kind of been this club that have had pretty stacked rosters, pretty stacked teams, several international players to kind of make those impacts. So to know that they not only had these very successful rosters, but also were able to make draft pick trades to make sure that they got a player like Soph Smith.
Exactly.
In the mix, you know, and then to have that secondary pick, like go one and two and like get a Morgan Weaver, like that's incredible. And so it's like, okay, it's like, sure, we have Emily Sonnet, but we might have to part with this incredible player to make sure that we get this future incredible
player. It's the long game so often. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I see trades and I'm like, oh, that's the 2026 draft pick. I can't even deal with that yet. Like, I'm just trying to get through this month and this week. But ultimately, it comes back around and you're like, wow, this trade paid out in the long run for this club, whatever it was. Yeah, I think draft night trades hands down in 2023 when Gotham traded the number two pick, which ends up being Michelle Cooper, for Lynn Williams. So Lynn Williams goes from Kansas City to Gotham. We were both at that draft in Philly, Sandra, and Cloud Nine just went crazy when that was announced. It was loud cheers and shouts, and Kansas City ends up getting Michelle Cooper, who, you know, makes a difference for them that year. It's just funny how things kind of trickle down in effect. And this year at the draft in 2024, the Spirit, they made a trade for number three pick, which ends up being Croy Bethune from Chicago. And the Red Stars get Sam Staub with that, which at the time was like, whoa, that happened like the morning before the draft or leading up to the draft start. And then in the draft, the Spirit get the number fifth pick, which ends up being Hal Hirschfeldt, and $250,000 in allocation money from North Carolina Courage in exchange for Ashley Sanchez. Just like a little behind the scenes, I was covering the draft. I was the host for it this year for the NWSL. And we found out about this. And we were like, holy cow, what is happening? But we couldn't announce it yet. We had to wait. So then we're like waiting for the commissioner to announce it so then we can talk about it on the show and at the desk. But look how well that panned out for Washington Spirit. They got Croy Bethune and Hal Hirschfeldt, two goals apiece in four games for both of those players. Pretty good.
I think it's the rapid return, right? If we're looking at like how these things are done and dusted. So it's like, especially when it comes to like picks, you're like, okay, it might take some time to see how a player works their way into a team and how they can be impactful. But you've got the Spirit coming off of this trade and this draft, and they've got their rookies already with like two goals apiece. It's incredible. It's incredible.
It is truly incredible. And then, I mean, even when you look at Ashley Sanchez, I think she's really thriving at North Carolina and the system that Sean Nahas has built, being able to produce there and continue to grow with that club. Ultimately, like, they're pretty good picks, and Chicago, they needed some stability in their back line after losing Tierna Davidson. Now Sam Staub fills that hole.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know if there's ever going to be a period of time where there's not wild moments like this in the league, and we'll just add them to the long list of historic things that have happened. But like, kind of bringing this full circle, how like we open this up with like, hey, there's a star player in the league who's requested a trade, Maria Sanchez. I'm gonna ask you a question for you, for when you're looking at a player like that, like, what do you think it's going to take? Is it going to take like this combination of things here that we've seen in the trend of trades? Is it going to take players? Is it going to take picks? Is it going to take international slots? All of that, all the above. What do you think?
Oh, that's a great question. It's a hefty contract that she's on. And so you have to think about if Maria Sanchez, where she goes, which club can afford her? And so that's why I think we could see it become a three-way trade, because clubs need money, if that makes sense. Ultimately, the way it goes, or if it becomes like a loan, I don't know. I think it will take a little bit. There are definitely clubs that could use her in the NWSL, but the fact that the clock is clicking, she only has until Friday at midnight to get this deal done. And I'm sure there's conversations and things are in the works. And
I'm sure we'll just have an update on Thursday.
Sandra, as soon as we end this live show on YouTube, it'll be breaking news.
That's how it always happens.
So, hey, we'll talk about it tomorrow. No matter what happens, we'll keep you updated on where in the world Maria Sanchez will land after she requested that trade from Houston Dash. That was fun chatting about all that. We're going to take a quick break. We're chatting some awards, way too early awards. I want your hot take, Sandra. Don't go anywhere. Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy. Hey, welcome back to Attacking Third. We are going to dive into some way too early awards for us. So Sandra and I are picking a couple of our biggest awards: MVP, Rookie of the Year, Most Improved, NWSL Biggest Surprise. And they didn't have to be players. They could be teams or clubs. So let's run through them. MVP up first, Sandra. Who is your way too early week four prediction for NWSL 2024 MVP?
All right. It's way too early. So again, we're prefacing things here for every second, every segment.
Even if it's a hot take.
But I don't know if this is a real hot take. There might actually be some folks who agree with me on this. But when I'm looking at these 4 weeks that we've got in front of us and each team and individual performances that have stood out, that's what I was looking at. So I did go with a player for MVP in this category. I'm looking at the Bay and I'm looking at Asia Oshuala. I don't know if there's a player that has rapidly become like the definitive piece for a team at this moment, which is also another angle that I think we can have a lot of fun talking about. Because I think when you look at a lot of these other teams right now, there's multiple teams with multiple goal scorers, players, multiple players who have been in involved in goal contributions. And I think for BFC, it's, you could look at them and you could point a finger and say it's been Oshuala. So while she has been on the score sheet as someone who has scored but also provided the assist, I think she has shown what an incredible caliber of player she is. Smash that bull narrative about internationals coming to the league and needing a little bit of time to get caught up to this league. Absolutely not for this player. Talk about getting here and putting the money where the mouth is. I think that's the other thing too. Like, we're watching these rapid transfers, you know, kind of balloon over time. And there might be some folks who are like intimidated by that. And they're like, whoa. Like, this is some high amounts, and maybe it's happening too fast. And you have a player like Oshuala where it's like, no, maybe they actually got her for a steal, especially for expansion franchise that's like trying to build identity. Like, what an incredible talent to sort of build around.
Yeah, I think that's such a good shout, because they did get her for a steal. I think people are now realizing how skilled Oshawala is and what she can do on the pitch, how she can change a game. And that's really the key for an MVP, whether it's way too early or we're predicting these in November at the end of this season. It's someone that changes the way a team plays, the game for a team, that without them on the pitch, this club is less. I mean, think of Caroline. She was the MVP last year for a very good reason. So my way too early MVP is Kansas City current forward, Temwa Chiwenga.
Let's do it.
Hands down, she is my MVP. She has changed the game in the NWSL for Kansas City. She's got 2 goals, 2 assists in 4 matches. She's unstoppable. And I'm not just talking about her speed. It's her ability to juke out the defenders, to get in behind them. She has a nose for the goal, which, frankly, Kansas City needed. They needed someone that was just going to score goals and go for it and change this club, because Kansas City needed a resurgence. And I don't think a lot of people thought Chiwenga was going to make as much of a difference as she did initially 4 games into this season, right? When you look at Bay FC with Asisat Oshawala and Kuda Nanji, these are huge players that had record-breaking contracts and trades and deals that came in. And I feel like Chiwenga kind of went under the radar until people started watching her. I mean, especially last weekend after Kansas City took on Gotham. It ends up being a 1-1 draw, but the goal coming from Chiwenga is because of her speed and her ability on the pitch to deceive defenders, to find pockets between the lines, to get in behind. She's my MVP.
I love it. I love that you and I are going back to back. We said, you know who's going to be an MVP possibly at the end of this season? It's going to be an African player. I love it.
And the internationals, they're making a difference in this league, hands down. All right, so moving on. We're going to talk about our rookie of the year. I'm going to go first with mine, Sandra. We talked about it a little bit in our fun trade segment, but forward for Washington Spirit, Croy Bethune. She was the number one draft pick. She came out of Georgia after spending a couple years on the West Coast. She's got 2 goals, 4 assists already in the season. She is making an impact in the league. She's dynamic. She's brave on the ball. She's combining really, really well. It looks like the partnership between Trinity Rodman, Saar, Andy Sullivan, and Croy Bethune has been there already. It looks like they've been playing together for years. That's how well Bethune looks and how comfortable and how well she's adjusted to not only the NWSL, but to the Washington Spirit. And I think the Spirit are putting Bethune in positions to succeed and setting her up for success in this league and on this team. But she's my rookie of the year way too early. What about you, Sandra?
All right, Lisa, hear me out on this, okay? Hold on to your butts. There's a shocker. I agree with you. I'm also going with Croy Bethune. Can I go with anyone else? Maybe we stay on the same team and look at her rookie teammate and Hal Hirschhoff. But I think we're all high on Croy Bethune for good reason. I remember even throwing it back to the offseason, players that we were excited about. Will they or won't they declare for the draft? Croy Bethune was one of these players. Had her going number one in one of my mock drafts as well. We had a couple of those rolling out ahead of the draft. Ended up dropping her a little bit in another mock, but either way, had her as a high first round pick for NWSL teams. And Washington Spirit recognizing that fact, saying, hey, this is a player that we're going to have to make a move more for multiple reasons. Not only was she a very talented prospect, very, very creative. I think I refer to her as probably one of the most creative players that we have seen come into NWSL in a long time, is from a collegiate system. And they knew that they had to make a move for this player for all of those reasons, but also because they knew they were going to move Ashley Sanchez. So it's like, who are you going to get in to help kind of continue to be that creative catalyst? And the fact that she's going out here and playing with players that have had some experience ahead of her at the professional level and looking very comfortable, very, very early rookie of the year candidate for me.
I think it was week 2. I don't remember exactly, but week 2 Washington Spirit match, Croy Bethune, she ends up getting the game winner. And she spoke post game to the commentators of the match. And not only was she polite and intelligent and kind in the way that she spoke to them and in the interview, but she talked about how she wants to make a difference and she wants to score. And towards the end of that match, I don't remember if anyone remembers. I don't know if anyone remembers this, but she had a shot off the crossbar. She was dribbling through defenders. She was throwing her body on the line. She wanted to win that game. And this is two games into the season as a rookie, and she already feels that deep desire to put her body on the line. And she ultimately gets the game winner for Washington, and they pick up 3 points. It's incredible. And I'm actually shocked that we both picked Bethune, because there are so many good rookies, right? Allie Sednor, number one. She's been impressive to watch this year. You mentioned Hal Hirschfeld also at Washington. I think Raylan Turner as well at Racing Louisville might surprise people. So this is way too early rookie of the year, because I would not be surprised if Raylan Turner stays in that conversation. I've been impressed with her at Racing Louisville. She looks really good. All right.
Now that we're back, it would be cool to maybe sort of keep like a rookie watch going. So like we're going with Croy right here in April. Maybe next month we'll highlight another rookie. Let us know if you want to see some stuff like that.
Ooh, I like that shout. Mark, can you write that down so we remember? Thanks. And let us know in the chat, guys, if you like that. Okay, let's move on. Most improved, Sandra. Who or which team is your most improved?
All right. I was torn here. I was torn between two teams. I was torn between Orlando Pride, and I was torn between Kansas City Current. I'm going to tip the scales and go KC Current in this one. I said, you know what? I'm loyal. I'm going to keep it in the Midwest. I love what they have been doing so far this season. I know I have been coming on to A3 episodes, and I have been harping, begging, pleading for a clean sheet for this team to maybe kind of clean things up defensively. But in the meantime, while it's still early days, you have to take a look at everything else that has been happening. I like the fact that Vlatko Adanovsky is plugging in his players and positions to succeed. I think we've seen that with Vanessa DiBernardo and sort of some of this resurgence that she's been providing for them as well. Lola Bonta is part of that equation in that midfield. But the internationals that they went out and got, I think, have been a massive, massive swing for them. What a play to get Biasa Nerato and Temo Chiwenga. I mean, these are two players at this point in time who are looking like absolute dream players. Like, how, like, people are going to start asking questions like, how did they actually make this happen? And you have to give credit to the scouts and talent scouts and everyone who has an eye on
Claire Hutton talent. Too. I want to throw Claire Hutton in that mix for KC. She's been great.
Young teenage player. That's what I'm saying. They're doing it in like all these different angles. They've got a teenage phenom. They've got Mekhi internationals. They've got savvy, experienced veterans. Like, they're checking off these boxes, and they're finally looking like the side that we were hoping to see for some time now. Because I mean, this is a franchise that has constantly found themselves, you know, wanting to be in headlines and say, hey, we want to make this a key marquee location for women's soccer. And it feels like it's all coming together, even if they're just a year or two removed from that runners up appearance in the championship. They took a deep dive following that year, and now they're kind of back up on a high again. So I think right now it's about being consistent and trying to sustain things, but I think right now they're walking away with most improved for me.
What makes Kansas City's most improved nomination for you and being at the top of the standings so sweet is that they had high expectations last year after quote unquote winning the 2023 offseason. And then they failed completely flat. They couldn't perform. It was such a nosedive. That's what makes this most improved. Such a good shout. I like it, Sandra. People in our chat are also giving Chicago a shout.
Of course.
And I really like that as well, because how can you not? A team that goes from bottom of the table to top of the table. They're in the top four right now.
Are you also sticking in the Midwest, Lisa? Who's your team?
I am sticking in the Midwest. I'm not going with Chicago, though. I just wanted to give a shout out to them, though. I'm going with a player. Sandra, a player as most improved, and she's in the Midwest. Midfielder for Racing Louisville, Taylor Flint.
Boo. This is not a Midwest team. Stop she's making Louisville the Midwest.
This is not East Coast. This is the Midwest.
No, this is the South. Kentucky is the South. But please continue to talk about
geography later. We can talk about geography later. Taylor Flint, formerly Taylor Korniak, is my most improved player. I think most improved sometimes gets a bad rep for a player that or a team that did so bad the year before. But to me, it's not about where you start. It's about how much growth and improvement you have seen. So Taylor, formerly Corniak Flint, was with the San Diego Wave, and she had good season there. She got calls up to the national team for the United States. But now that she's with Racing Louisville, under Bev Yanez, we are seeing a different Flint. She has a different role with Louisville that is really working for her. She's sitting a little deeper in the midfield. She's playing almost a double pivot with Jalen Howell, who's in the midfield with her. And now that Savannah DeMello is back in the midfield as well, it really leans to putting Flint in the best position, because she, as this almost double pivot, Bev Yanez has talked about it, saying that she wants her double pivot, whether it's Howell and Flint as the 6-8, to really flex and fluctuate. Who goes forward? Who sits back? Who supports the attackers? Who covers the defense? It needs to be fluid throughout the game. And we're honestly seeing Flint sit a little bit deeper than she was ever at San Diego. She was so high, and it's working for Taylor Flint. She ranks first in the NWSL in duels won and interception. She ranks second in tackles, third in aerial duels won. She is the only NWSL player to rank in the top five in each of these categories. Taylor Flint is that girl. She is most improved, and she's going to help Racing Louisville continue to grow and climb throughout this season.
Was her goal disallowed? Did you agree with that call?
Yeah. Yeah, I agreed with the call, unfortunately, but as a six, it's okay. I don't need her to be scoring goals. I need her to keep winning the ball, get into those tackles, sit in the right pockets. I've been impressed watching Flint.
I think that's a great show. I love that you went player specific versus team specific.
Remember, we make up our own rules here.
We do what we want.
Okay. NWSL biggest surprise, Sandra, which team is your biggest surprise?
All right. I hate to go like kind of a little bit of Debbie Downer here, but we chatted about them a little bit already. But honestly, my biggest surprise right now is the fact that Portland Thorns are in last place this first 4 weeks of the season. And I'm sorry, when we were doing any previewing content, off-season content, any of that, I don't think any of us had Portland Thorns being in last place to open the season within 4 weeks. Not at all. So for me, that's my biggest surprise, and I'm going to stick with it, because when you look at the caliber of talent that they have across that roster, they still were rolling into 2024 with a fairly deep roster. So kind of your usual suspects that we would anticipate that we were going to see in that starting 11, but still enough players to maybe kind of weave into the game or throughout the long course of a 26 match season to stay and remain competitive. Not only that, they went out and got other players, adding Jesse Fleming to the mix. That was huge. That was a signing that we all celebrated, because we were like, okay, they're going to lose some players via free agency. There might be some things, some holes that they have to plug in and fill, but surely a team that has such a winning culture in its history embedded within them will do well this season, especially in a season where playoff line has expanded to 8 teams. And yet somehow here we are in the opening stretch of the season and they are in last place. Biggest surprise for me by far.
Sandra. Same. Yeah. How my biggest surprise is how poor Portland Thorns are. How they can't put together complete games. They can't pick up points. They can't score. I echo everything you just mentioned, because this team has been struggling this year. They're just hopefully the shakeup in their coaching staff brings about some new light, some fresh ideas, a new spark within this team. Right. As a player, sometimes when you think about your head coach is now moving, you have an interim head coach. As a player, you can almost take this as, okay, they're trying. Let me try to have a different mindset going to it. And there needs to be a shakeup at Portland. It can't all fall on the shoulders of Sophia Smith. There has to be group play, but I also want to see Portland put together all the best players on the pitch at the same time. Like, why isn't Megan Klingenberg getting more minutes if she's dealing with a knock? Like, you got to get her healthy. She's a game changer with, you know, Sugita on the pitch as well. That changes things. So that Portland, my biggest surprise. I have an honorable mention too for NWSL biggest surprise. How good Washington Spirit is. how good they are, right? It kind of sounds like a backhanded compliment, but I don't mean it as that. I just, they lost some big players with Sam Staub going out of the center back role, who was an iron woman, had started and played what felt like every single game since she had been at Washington, without Ashley Sanchez in the midfield, without Dorian Bailey on this roster as well. There was a lot of change. You have a player in Tara McKeown that was a striker, and just in her second year, she's now the leader in the center back role. It just, there were so many question marks with Casey Krueger playing a center back role, not an outside back role, how this side was going to look. And Washington, they look good. I'm impressed with them putting together points, complete games, just dominating this past weekend, getting their third straight win and doing it in triumphant fashion, 3-1 over the Houston Dash. I've been really impressed with Washington Spirit, and they're a big surprise for me.
I love that. I think that's a great shout because there are CBS Game of the Week this week. I love it.
Of course, you can watch the NWSL back on CBS this Saturday, April 20th. All right, this was fun. I like doing these Way Too Early awards. We're going to take a little asterisk and take note of our rookies and maybe circle back to that in a few weeks, and how those rookies are doing, who's at the top of our Rookie of the Year chat and caliber. If you guys like this, let us know. Leave us a review, a comment, and if you liked this segment. Don't go anywhere, though, because we have a very special interview next. Puerto Rican goalkeeper Sydney Martinez joins us to talk about CONCACAF, W Gold Cup, Puerto Rico, everything. Don't go anywhere.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
We are so pleased to welcome in Puerto Rican goalkeeper Sydney Martinez to Attacking Third. Sydney, welcome in. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're good. I mean, we were just talking a little off mic. We're so excited to chat with you and kind of dive a little bit deeper into everything that you do in women's football, because Puerto Rico and you were the talk of the town about a month ago for the inaugural CONCACAF W Gold Cup. Puerto Rico completely caught the attention and hearts of a lot of soccer fans. It was the first CONCACAF tournament that didn't qualify teams for anything specific. It was a tournament for real games, competition, not national teams, exposure, getting together. So when you and your Puerto Rican teammates heard about the W Gold Cup, what was your reaction to the inaugural tournament?
I think we were all just excited to have a chance to play against so many like big teams and get in such a big tournament. I mean, going into it, we got in with Mexico and Trinidad and Tobago, and we've played them a couple of times, but to know that if we do well, we can go and play even bigger teams, it was just a good good opportunity for us.
Love that. You know, before we actually get into the nuts and bolts of the tournament, the way the structure and the format was, there was the preliminary round before the actual tournament. So really, from the jump, you all kind of put the tournament on notice. Anyone who was watching this tournament, it was like, wait a second, we got to pay attention to Puerto Rico here, because there was a moment in that preliminary where you had not just one, but multiple saves and big moments against Haiti. Kind of knowing that you were going to have an opportunity like that in front of you, going up against Haiti with an opportunity to really have a place in what would have been another really big group with Brazil, Colombia, Panama. What was the type of statement that Puerto Rico was hoping to make going into that preliminary game?
I mean, I think for us, we knew what group we would be in if we won, but that wasn't our focus going into the Haiti game. Our focus was, hey, we're here. We want to show out. We are a whole different team now. We have a lot of new girls on the team, and we wanted to show out that, hey, we're here. We can do it. So I think that was our main focus going into it all.
No, for sure. I think you all achieved that during the tournament. But going from from Haiti, and then knowing that you all were going to be slotted into a really chaotic crew with Brazil, Colombia, Panama. These are some heavy hitters when we're looking at the landscape of global women's soccer. Now that there's been a little bit of time to kind of, you know, be a little reflective perhaps on what it all meant, was there a particular match during that group stage, whether it was against Brazil, Colombia, Panama, where you learned something new about yourself as a player, or that maybe helped you in your own development and growth?
Honestly, I think it'd be a combination between the Haiti match and the Brazil match, and maybe even Panama. When we, with beating Haiti, I was like, hey, we got a shot. We can do pretty good against these next teams. And then come that we play Brazil first, and we were like, all right, here we go. We're playing Brazil, top 10 in the world right now. We're down at 107 or 109 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, we just beat Haiti. Let's see how we do against Brazil. So, and then we held them until the 81st, 82nd minute, held them at a 0-0 and had a couple of chances to score on them.
Yeah.
Like, they had a couple of shots. And then finally with Panama came back from losing that to winning it. I think that's the moment I'm like, hey, we as a team have grown just in this tournament alone from game to game. So I think that was the moment I was like, we all figured out like, hey, this is, we got to keep this momentum going.
It's amazing how much confidence can help a group, right? Even just like those little tiny wins along the way, or right, holding Brazil until the 80 plus minute. That's huge accomplishment. It is. It's not easy to do. And there were times when you guys made it look a little easy. Okay, we have to talk about how kind of the tournament ended for Puerto Rico, because and the drawing of lots. Just to give people listening or watching a little bit of background. So their final group stage match day for your group, you and Puerto Rico finish with 1 win and 3 points. The next day is the final group stage match day of the entire tournament for Group C. Costa Rica, they fall to Canada 3-0, and Paraguay defeats El Salvador 3-2, which means that tied on points was Puerto Rico and Costa Rica tied. There are tiebreakers now. You are also tied on all three tiebreakers: points, goal differential, goals for, least number of yellows or red cards. So it comes down to the fifth tiebreaker to see who advances to the quarterfinal and who comes out. It is the drawing of lots. And it comes down to names in a fishbowl being pulled. I mean, heartbreaking, exhausting. I want to know from you, ultimately, Costa Rica's name is drawn, they advance. But as a player who just competed and played in all of these tough games, for it to come down to your name being drawn out of a bowl, I mean, is that exhausting? Is that deflating?
Yes, in a way it was. It was like, man, we couldn't have had something else, maybe a PK shootout, or let's do something else, Holy Wars. Let's do something. Maybe not a full game, maybe not a full another game. That was a lot, but like just something else. But at the same time, I think we were all very sad afterwards. I know I was bawling my eyes out after, because in my mind I was like, maybe I just didn't work quite hard enough. I need to do one more thing, just one more push, one more save would have had us through. But at the end, the next morning, like waking up, it was like, hey, we may have tied on everything with them, but we did really well, and we'll be back here for the next one, and we'll just make sure we don't tie anybody next time around, and that we should be in there.
I appreciate you being like honest and transparent about that. Like that sucks to have it kind of come down to that. And you know what, Sydney, you are not alone. I know some of us out here were like, on social media, we were posting through it. We were like, are you kidding me? Like, it's coming down to this. Like, this can't be the way Puerto Rico goes out. Because again, I mean, there were so many, I think, casual folks who maybe don't keep an eye, too close of an eye on CONCACAF, that kind of found themselves like falling in love with Puerto Rico along the way. And then to sort of have it kind of come to such, you know, an abrupt end. You're not alone in that, where folks were like, there's got to be another way. But thank you for just being honest and being like, yeah, that actually kind of sucked. Like that, but it did. It's just kind of like there and just like that, poof, you know. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to like stick with that a little bit with this next question, because part of what happens when there's an ending, like you think about that. You think about the what you achieved, what you accomplished, the things that you're proud of, but there's also the perspective of, well, what comes next? So for you, for Sidney Martinez as goalkeeper of Puerto Rico women's national team, what would you like to see next for Puerto Rico?
I'd like to see us just continue to grow. I mean, we are on such a good uptake right now. We have a lot of pro girls now down in Mexico. We have girls in Spain, Turkey. We have another girl in Cyprus. I just want to see the younger girls who are getting ready to finish up college continue and playing on, because we are on the younger side for a team. I mean, we had Sarah and a couple of these other girls who are in high school still, and we're trying to call their schools and everything to make sure they could stay longer and be allowed to stay and all that stuff. So I just want to see us continue to grow as a team and see our younger players continue up in soccer.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. And I do have to tell you, Sidney, that Puerto Rican football fans were very excited to watch you guys during the W Gold Cup. We've heard it in New York on the streets, people being like, hey, that W Gold Cup and the competition, getting to see them, the exposure and having competition to watch you and cheer for you helps. It helps the community. And it's fun for me as just a fan to watch it or covering it. It was really fun to watch you guys. And that is the next step for Puerto Rico and the women's national team there, to continue to grow and to continue to have exposure. But it's also an effect in CONCACAF as well. There are a lot of different nations that want to continue to grow and get bigger. And as a CONCACAF region in general, we want that. We want the competition to be really high. So how do we grow CONCACAF women's football, do you think?
I think just continue giving the girls the opportunities and boys, girls and boys, the opportunity to play throughout the islands. I mean, PR, we didn't have as many opportunities back then as like girls do now on the island. So I think just continuing that growth process is what's going to be the best to help all of CONCACAF continue to get better.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I listen, I'm right there with you. I totally agree. Cause I think it's important for people to hear that, even if maybe they think it sounds like as simple as that, it's not. Like, sometimes you have to make sure your federations are all on the same page, like getting more games for the programs and stuff like that. And for a lot of people who maybe aren't aware, like, maybe there's a reason why they found themselves being pleasantly surprised by Puerto Rico. Because like you said, the opportunity finally was there. It was in front of you all, and you kind of like really took hold of that with something like a Road to Gold Cup qualifiers or a preliminary match, and then really exciting games during the actual Gold Cup. It's like you had these games in front of you. So look at what happened when that was provided for you all. So I love that. I'm with you. I'm here for you know, more international windows, time for the team to get together. I think what people are also maybe curious about is like ways that they can continue to support the Puerto Rican national team program. So I know that there's a new line of kits out, like obviously watching the games, following players on their socials, being invested in what they have going on, and something like maybe buying a kit, you know, is a really fun thing to do to go ahead and support PR. So, you know, I mean, if you had to, outside of yourself, let's just have a little fun here to close things out. Outside of yourself, maybe this is putting you on the spot a little bit, but you can't buy your own kit. Which teammate's kit do you want to sport?
Oh, who on my team am I going to grab? Do I have to pick which one, or can I pick a couple?
You can pick a couple. I'm not going to hold you to it.
I think all day long. Let's see. First off, I'm going to pick Maddie Cox, Madison Cox. Love that girl to death. She is the rock in front of me. Absolutely amazing defender. Who am I gonna go next? I gotta go with Joelle Love, beast up top. I don't think I ever see her stop moving up top. Same with Danielle.
Nice.
And then I think I have to go for Sarah. Sarah just comes out and shows every time she's on that field. Being the youngest, she doesn't let that scare her or stop her or anything. She loves the game and she loves being a part of it. So she's just going to fight for everything. So I think those three are definitely my top three of what, if I had to go for.
I love it. If anyone needs any tips on kids to get, you just heard it from.
Those are the ones. That's absolutely amazing. I love when teammates always shout each other out and give them praise, because it is such a team sport and it's so fun. To kind of close things out, though, for sure, what for you, what do you want to see next for you personally as a goalkeeper, whether it's personally or with the national team? What's next for you?
Well, I'm still currently a free agent, so I can't wait to hopefully be on that next team and show wherever I end up going, like, hey, it wasn't just a fluke what you saw in the tournament. Like, I can do what needs to be done, and I can even go higher than there. I feel like I'm not even at my peak performance yet. I feel like there's so much I can still learn and grow as a player and a person, just knowledge of the game. And I think that's what's really pushing me forward and hoping that I can continue on that way.
Sydney, that is fantastic. Well, we are wishing the best for you, and we're so excited to watch you follow your story and your journey wherever it takes you next. And of course, with the Puerto Rican women's national team, always cheering you on. Thank you so, so much for joining us today.
No, thank you guys for inviting me.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Hey, welcome back to Attacking Third. Thanks again to Sydney Martinez for joining us. I mean, really great interview to kind of hear from her and elevate her as a player, CONCACAF, and of course, Puerto Rico, because they did make waves during the CONCACAF W Gold Cup. It was really fun to watch. So shout out to her for joining us. Okay, final segment here, Sandra, before we close out the show, our In Case You Missed It segment, I'm going to run through some fun things that have happened in around the world of women's football, some stats, some milestones that teams and players have reached. Defender Sam Staub, now with the Chicago Red Stars, she sets a new NWSL record for the most consecutive regular season appearances at 94 appearances. Holy cow. We talked about her a bit with Washington Spirit and how much of a namestay she was in the center back. But now she's with the Red Stars and she just continues to climb and elevate and make herself a staple no matter which team she is in. Crystal Dunn, who is now with Gotham FC, she made her 150th NWSL appearance, a big blockbuster trade in the offseason from Portland Thorns to Gotham FC, and now there's Crystal Dunn. Caprice Didasco, defender, who is with Bay FC, she will make her 150th appearance next match with Bay FC, so keep an eye out for that. And if you're going to the game for Bay FC, give her a shout out. Maybe make Caprice Didasco a sign for her 150th appearance. Steph Catley, she made her 100th appearance. Sorry, I thought there was a couple extra zeros there. But 100th appearance for Arsenal. Incredible to see, Sandra. The longevity of these players in their careers is very impressive.
Yeah, I think, look, I don't blame you for pausing for a second where you're like, oh, I thought there were more zeros after that, like 1,000 appearances. Why not? But I think that's part of the beauty. That's part of the fun and the growth, I think, really, like that we're all witnessing right now across women's soccer, that we can have all of these different players kind of reaching these milestones. And like knowing even just within here specifically in NWSL that there's just this very lengthy list, right, of players who have kind of reached these milestones. I mean, just coming off of a weekend where you're talking about Crystal Dunn or how Jasmine Spencer is being celebrated for Angel City. The fact that we can look to Seattle and see Lauren Barnes with like all of these appearances with one team, that's like just something I don't think we're ever going to see again, honestly.
Yeah, and shout out to the people in our chat. Owen, Courage, North Carolina Courage. They got their win number 100. Martha, she scored the Orlando Pride as a club, their 200th goal. There are milestones being created, records being broken constantly around the NWSL, and it is very, very fun to watch. All right, that does it for our Wednesday episode. But don't worry, guys. Attacking Third is back tomorrow on the Golazo Network, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to preview the NWSL weekend. We're going to give you the latest news and analysis around women's football and dive a little deeper into the coaching carousel to some extent at the Portland Thorns. So you don't want to miss that. Sandra, final thoughts from you?
I have thoughts on who they should interview. So go read my piece on .com. I've included a couple names in there that are familiar to people. So go check them out. See if you agree or disagree on who the Thorns should interview for that role.
Oh, I like that. Shall always read Sandra's articles on CBSSports.com. They're wonderful. All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us. Especially if you joined us live on YouTube, this was such a pleasure. Make sure you follow Attacking Third wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. We're also available on youtube.com/Attacking Third. And you can catch us on the CBS Sports Golazo Network for all your women's soccer coverage. For Mark and Sandra, I'm Lisa. This was Attacking Third.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.